Energy drives our nation's economy and is an important part of our daily lives. By taking steps to become more energy efficient, we can all save money and help reduce our nation's overall energy demand. I'm Energy Secretary Sam Bodman, encouraging you to use Energy Star products and appliances such as dishwashers, washing machines, and thermostats. They can reduce your energy bills by up to 30%. Replacing your existing light bulbs with Energy Star qualified fluorescent lights in the lamps and fixtures throughout your home will save up to 50% on lighting costs. By installing Energy Star storm windows and double pane windows, you can reduce energy loss in your home by 25 to 50%. You have the power to make a difference. By using Energy Star products, you can reduce your home energy bills and help our nation reduce its energy use.
More information on Energy Star products and savings can be found at www.energysavers.gov or call toll-free 1-877-337-3463. This powerful savings message is provided by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Alliance to Save Energy.
Forecast of Westchester County and the vicinity for this Thursday morning, mostly cloudy skies, a few showers through the morning hours. And we'll see variably cloudy weather through the afternoon. More showers, possibly a gusty thunderstorm developing, highs into the lower 80s. Mostly cloudy tonight to partly cloudy overnight. Could be a shower before midnight, lows into the middle 60s. Friday's weather, plenty of sunshine, but it will become more humid and warmer as well, highs into the lower 90s. Friday night, mostly cloudy, a few showers, possibly a thunderstorm, upper 60s, hazy sunshine. Humid weather on Saturday, chance of showers, thunderstorms, highs into the upper 80s. Similar weather for Sunday, showers and thunderstorms likely, highs upper 70s. I'm Steve Pelletieri, Jr., reporting for WVOX, WVIP, the Whitney Radio Network.
The latest forecast from the 1460 WVOX Weather Center, brought to you by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
At Entergy, meeting our region's need for reliable, affordable, and clean electricity is an everyday success story. That's because our Indian Point Energy Center supplies up to 38% of the region's power needs. It also produces some of the least expensive power generated in the region. And most importantly, it does not produce greenhouse gas emissions. That's right, zero greenhouse gases. This plays a key role in helping this area improve its air quality. So it should come as no surprise that a growing number of environmentalists, including Dr. Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace, say nuclear power is a vital tool in the fight against global warming. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.safesecurevital.com. Because the more you know, the more you realize that Indian Point's clean, reliable, and affordable energy is a big part of the climate change solution.
1460 WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Levensold, your host for this series on the natural world, education, and culture. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, June 26th, 2008, the seventh day of summer. We have lost less than a minute of daylight since yesterday, a negligible amount, but a slight reduction nonetheless. Last Friday was the first day of summer, and the reduction of daylight is inexorable, of course. Daylight will reduce slowly at first, then more quickly until the winter solstice on December 21st. We have a net gain of 1 minute since last we met 2 weeks ago, and that's the last time you'll hear about gains until December. The sun rose at 5:25 this morning. It will set at 8:31 this evening. We will have 15 hours and 6 minutes of daylight today. At the solstice, the longest day of the year, it was 15 hours and 8 minutes. So we've already lost 2, and not to emphasize that. These are still very long days, and get out and enjoy them. The moon rises at 1:21 this afternoon. It sets 47 past midnight tomorrow morning. Today marks last quarter. Next full moon is on July 18th. Next high tides in New Rochelle, 5:04 this afternoon. Yonkers, 3:36 this afternoon. Dobbs Ferry, 4:04. Tarrytown, 4:20. And in Peekskill, 4:59. Now our regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives in Iraq. May they live on in all of our hearts. 19 service members died in June up to last Friday, the last day for which statistics are available. To date, there have been 4,109 American deaths, 12 more than at our last broadcast, and tens of thousands more with grave physical and or mental injuries. Deb, can you put on the theme for just a second? We're going to take just a very short break to take care of an administrative thing. We'll be right back. We're looking for the theme, and just put it on just for a couple of seconds, and I'll read you the casualties as soon as I come back from this administrative. Okay, we're back. Sorry for that. But apparently our first guest is not available, and we were just trying to somehow scratch him up. This fellow, I'll just tell you briefly, his name was Michael Lasko. He's the head of Taxi, which is a music, A&R company out in California, and we got the wrong contact information. So we're not going to be able to do Michael today. We're going to have to catch up with him at another date. I was looking forward to it. Very interesting fellow. He's probably wondering why his phone's not ringing right now, and we'll work it out some other time. However, fortunately, we have a very wonderful guest here, but we'll introduce him in a minute. Sorry, I'm just talking too fast. Let me just put my mind in gear. We were up to our regular SAD feature, which is the names of American service members who have lost their lives. And this is the list of casualties for today. Staff Sergeant Du Hai Tran, age 30, of Reseda, California, was killed when a roadside bomb hit his vehicle during combat ops in Balad, Iraq. Specialist Jason N. Cox, age 21, Elyria, Ohio, roadside bomb in Hila, Iraq, on June 16th. Sergeant John D. Aragon, age 22, of Antioch, California. He is an airborne fellow. Roadside bomb again, Caramia, June 12th, which was the date of our last broadcast. Perhaps Sergeant Aragon was killed while we were on the air. No way to know, of course. Private Eugene D.M. Kanakaoli, age 19, of Maui, June 11th. Lance Corporal Javier Perales, Jr., he was with the Marines, age 19, San Elizario, Texas, a non-hostile incident in Anbar Province on June 11th. Sergeant First Class Gerald M. Reed, age 40, 86th Combat Support Hospital, Jacksonville, Florida. And how many more American servicemen who are alive today will be gone when next we meet? Each life is a treasure and a tragic loss to each of us. May these American servicemen live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the very near future, because there are no more deaths to report. Okay, time for the Culture Corner, my reviews of plays, ballets, opera, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions, and you have the right to differ from them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. Well, I saw a movie called Get Smart. When next we meet in 2 weeks, I will have seen the Broadway comedy Boeing Boeing, which won the Tony last week for the best revival, so you can look forward to that. Get Smart is rated S for silly. Steve Carell as Max is okay. I guess being accustomed to Don Adams makes him hard to match, but he's not bad. Anne Hathaway is beginning to show her range, having started her career on television in the series Get Real, and after a number of G-rated appearances, she moved to change her image and did a couple of adult films, probably rated R, I don't mean adult, Havoc and Brokeback Mountain, and she appeared nude in one or both of those. She co-starred with Meryl Streep in The Devil Wears Prada in 2006, and how can you get a better co-star than Meryl Streep? Here she shows comic versatility as well. If you recall the TV series Get Smart, you remember that Don Adams created this wry character, which incidentally was the character was written by Mel Brooks and Buck Henry, and Don Adams actually breathed life into it. Some reviewers tell you the story as if that mattered. You are here for the laughs, not the story. Discussing the narrative is like Playboy magazine telling you which books the centerfold has read. Completely beside the point. So if you like S for silly rated comedies and you have recollection and affection for the characters, go see it. Don't expect much. Don't bother about the story. Don't sit on the edge of your seat. And for Pete's sake, don't engage your brain. Well, we're doing great today. We just got everything right together. Everything is just so together today, so I'll just keep running my mouth so you know that we're still here. Okay. First of all, let me identify us. You are listening to WVOX AM 1460, originating in New Rochelle, New York. If you are listening in Newark, New Jersey, or Newark, Delaware, Albany, New York, or Albany, Georgia, Springfield, Illinois, Massachusetts, or Oregon, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live. Dateline, June 25th, Laxahatchee, Florida. The Everglades took a large step toward restoration on Tuesday when the nation's largest sugarcane producer agreed to sell all of its assets to the state and go out of business. Water hopefully will flow from Lake Okeechobee in central Florida to Florida Bay down off the coast and to the south. It moved a giant step closer to reality. Florida will now pay $1.75 billion for United States sugar, which will continue farming before turning over 187,000 acres north of Everglades National Park, along with other assets. And while Florida is not my favorite state, I do love Everglades National Park. I do love the Everglades, and I go there every chance I get, and I touch the alligators when I'm feeling crazy. And the birds are really magnificent. Go out in canoes and kayaks and swim. I mean, paddle among the gators and the wonderful exotic birds. It's really cool. If you go down there and you happen to see a crocodile, don't paddle near them. They are definitely dangerous, and alligators definitely are not. In fact, there has never been an incident of any kind involving alligators in Everglades National Park, if I'm not mistaken. This particular acquisition would be Florida's biggest land acquisition ever. Again, it's 187,000 acres. Great. And it's right in the right place where water can be allowed to flow from Okeechobee down through southern Florida. The fate of the company's 1,900 workers does remain in question. That's a human problem, but for once it's the other way around. Generally, we push animals around and fish around and other creatures around to be convenient for humans. Here we are trying to make it convenient for an ecosystem and inconveniencing some people, and while I regret that we have to inconvenience those people, so be it. Certainly, this is a very important ecological issue. The deal has been portrayed as monumental as the creation of the nation's first national park, which was Yellowstone. Environmentalists said the price of $1.7 billion was a terrific bargain. The impact on the Everglades could be substantial. The natural flow of water would be restored, and the 292 square miles would add about 1 million acre-feet of water storage. That amount of water, which would fill about 500,000 Olympic-sized swimming pools, could soak the southern Everglades during the dry season, protecting wildlife and preventing fires. Some of the proposed plumbing, complicated wells, and pumps now might never have to be built. See, the original restoration plan was to divert water and pump it and soak the southern Everglades artificially, kind of. But this would make that unnecessary. So much of that will not have to be done. And that's, of course, millions of dollars, plumbing and all that. So that kind of goes up against the, that helps to amortize that $1.7 billion. The natural downslope of the land could be restored, which would just allow for the natural flow. If all works out as hoped, in 20 years, this is an optimistic guess, but it is a guess, it will look indistinguishable from the way it looked before, as the quote says it, the white man arrived in the 1890s. White men are always screwing things up. This reporter has spent many hours in the Everglades and is one of my favorite ecosystems on Earth. This is a dream I never thought would come about, and I am hopeful that I was wrong. Okay, my first guest, or my only guest today, which is, I'm grateful for the extra time because Eric has so much to say, his name is Eric Byron. He's an environmentalist, professional scuba diver, and shark expert. Eric is right here in the studio with me. Welcome, Eric Byron.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
I'm good. So how's the weather in New Rochelle? Oh, wait a minute. We're both in the same place. I generally ask my guests about the weather, and here we are. All right, so as I suggested in that item. What we've done to the oceans and many ecosystems, it's actually the oceans is one of the scariest things to me. Mm-hmm. What is the condition of the oceans today, and how do you fit sharks into that scenario?
Sharks are what's called an apex predator. They occupy the top of the marine food chain, and because of this, they are primarily in control of certain populations of fish, which would trickle down through the marine ecosystem. Fish would eat plants. Plants would provide oxygen and carbon dioxide. And when any one of these steps along the marine ecosystem is interrupted because of human impact, be it overfishing, pollution, things of that nature, there is a systemic problem that ends up causing a major problem around oceans around the world.
There are certain species of animals, insects, this and that. People look at them and we don't need those.
Right.
Sharks are fearsome, according to legend, but really they're not. They're gentle, large animals.
Right.
You see bees and wasps and things like that, and people, they freak out.
Sure.
But bees, without bees, as Einstein said, the human race could not last for more than 4 years.
This is true.
Once bees are gone. So sharks, they're not really fearsome, are they?
No, they're really not. And more and more research is uncovering the hidden intelligence of these animals. The great white, for instance, that hunts marine mammals such as seals and walruses, dolphins even, have to be extremely intelligent in order to be able to capture their prey because of the course of evolution. Evolution has made sure that these animals, their prey items, are quick and are able to elude an apex predator. So most of the time when you're watching the Discovery Channel, and you're watching Shark Week, and you're watching a great white fly out of the water like they do in South Africa and other places around the world, but primarily in South Africa, you almost feel sorry for the seal, and say to yourself, wow, if anybody's swimming there, they're definitely going to get attacked and eaten and killed. It's ferocious, it's jaws, blah, 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 blah. There are tons of researchers, shark enthusiasts, and ordinary, everyday people like you and me, Bob, who are finally beginning to realize the impact that these magnificent predators have on human beings.
So if they were to disappear from the face of the earth, we said that the bees, that we couldn't handle that hit. But what if sharks were to disappear? Like some people are trying to make them disappear. They capture them, they cut off their fins for soup, and they throw the carcass, still alive probably, into the sea to have other predators, once it becomes debilitated, to just take it. What happens if there are no sharks left? Is the world a safer place, or is it much worse? Or?
Much, much worse, in my opinion. The Moat Marine Laboratory down in Florida did a particular study off the coast of Florida, and it showed that there was a decrease of about 90% of the species of reef sharks in a particular area. what this had, the reef subsequently died. What ended up happening is the decrease in shark population led to an increase in the population of groupers. The increase of the population of groupers led to the groupers eating more of the fish that eat the algae that grows on the reef. Because the algae then grew out of control, the reef died.
So this is what we mean by an ecosystem, how everything yes. interacts with each other. So when the sharks were lost, it just trickled down and the reefs were lost ultimately.
The reefs were lost ultimately.
Because fishermen, they evolved in each other's presence.
Exactly. And you know, one researcher put it very, very well, where he said like the marine ecosystem is like the game Jenga, where if you pull just one little tab, you know, from the bottom, the entire structure can collapse.
Yes, and I know that game.
Right. interestingly enough, right here, right at home in Westchester County, there is legislation that is being supported by very many people.
Well, let's hold that legislation for just a second. Okay. We do have a caller. Good morning, caller.
Hi, good morning. This is Larry. I just tuned into your show.
Hi, Larry.
Very interesting. Sorry I didn't get it from the beginning.
That's okay.
I dove a lot. And I dove with tons of sharks, especially in the South Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And what that movie Jaws did, you know, devastated the sharks. You know, everybody has a big fear of them and everything.
Right.
And it's a shame how sharks were slaughtered after that movie came out. Everyone's going out to these macho guys going out to grab the teeth from an animal that's a beautiful creature. I mean, there's nothing more beautiful in the water than a shark.
Right.
You know, and, you know, I dove in the Sound also, and, like, if you dive at Hudson Park, everything down there is dead.
Yes.
You know, there's nothing. No vegetation, no nothing.
Right.
And then when you go to some other place, like in the Bahamas, they don't really have a good reef system. But, you know, you see how the reefs are scarred from anchors and everything else. People got to be really careful and start respecting nature and leave the predators alone. They serve a purpose, and they're beautiful creatures.
Absolutely, Larry. And to add to that, the marine ecosystem is not fully understood by marine scientists right now. Mm-hmm. We're learning more and more every single day. But it's impossible at this point to be able to predict the long-term effects of overfishing, of illegal shark finning. And this is just one species, essentially, of marine animal we're talking about. Unfortunately, as we pointed out earlier, the marine ecosystem is interconnected, and if you destroy or damage one part of it, it has a cascading effect on the rest of it, which will eventually hit human beings in some way, shape, or form.
Well, the Japanese are famous for the shark fins, and they just
yes.
slaughter them unnecessarily.
And whales, too. The Japanese do not have a good history when it comes to exploiting the seas.
Mm-hmm. And that line netting or hooking, whatever it is, they string it out for miles. They kill all kinds of fish.
Right, the long line fishing, yeah.
Yeah, they ought to outlaw it. And who am I speaking with, by the way?
My name is Eric Byron, Larry.
Eric,
you're a diver, I take it.
I am.
He's a diver, and in fact, I'll give you a little background on Eric. Eric is one of the crew that dives in the tanks at the Coney Island Aquarium to provide routine maintenance, but they won't let him dive in the shark tank. Is that right, Eric?
No, that's true.
Why is that?
Because of insurance issues and a bunch of other things. But
insurance. Are you going to bite the shark, or is he going to bite?
They don't let us dive in a shark tank, but we do get a chance to study them, however.
Have you dove the South Pacific?
No, I haven't.
Tahiti and Bora Bora and that?
No, I haven't dove the South Pacific, but I have dove extensively in the Caribbean and off the coast of Mexico and here in Florida and the United States.
Cozumel's great.
Cozumel's beautiful. The reef system there is starting to recover nicely from the hurricanes from a few years ago, so scientists are encouraged to see that.
Yeah, well, I'll keep listening, and good luck, guys.
Thanks, Larry. We have to take a break in a little while. Just introduce the next item. You talked about this legislation in New Rochelle. We have about a half a minute.
There's legislation currently in front of the Westchester County to ban shark fin products here in Westchester. Okay. It is called the Shark Fin Product Prohibition
That's
Law.
That's very interesting that they would have it here in Westchester. And we'll be back after this break. If you're listening in our local area, you're listening on AM 1460. If you're listening elsewhere, you are online at www.wvox.com. We're going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
This is the flagship station of Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX and worldwide at WVOX.com. Now, the latest update from Fox News Radio.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Lori London. Gunning for a fight, the nation's high court gives a landmark ruling on the right to bear arms. Fox Radio's Chris Barnes is live in Washington.
And Lori, by a 5-4 margin, the justices ruled individuals do have the right to own guns, and in doing so, this ruling strikes down Washington, D.C.'s strict 32-year-old handgun ban. Challenged by a D.C. special police officer who was denied a permit to keep a firearm in his home, the Supreme Court heard arguments in this case in March. Gun rights advocates insisting the Second Amendment gives the right to keep and bear arms to individual citizens. The city and gun control groups fired back. It guarantees that right to state militias, not individuals. The ruling, though, going the other way, and it will have a national impact for sure. Lori?
Chris, well, surveys estimate there are about 90 guns for every 100 U.S. citizens across the country, making us one of the most heavily armed nations in the world. This is a Fox News alert.
The hottest, most welcoming bar, the in-place in Manhattan these days, is not some anonymous hidden-away spot downtown. It's right smack in the middle of Manhattan. And are you ready for this? It's located in the famous Le Cirque restaurant, America's most celebrated dining venue, right there on East 58th Street, between Lexington and 3rd, in the dramatic courtyard of the Bloomberg Building. That's where you'll find and enjoy Edgy's Bar, the happening place in town. Edgy's Bar is elegant, all right. It's also casual with a sexy, romantic, glamorous atmosphere. No jackets or ties ever required at Edgy's Bar at Le Cirque, the wonderful new meeting place with a dazzling bar menu from Le Cirque's three-star kitchen, all at very reasonable prices. Open late every evening except Sunday. It's fancy but casual and informal and altogether great fun. Edgy's Bar at Le Cirque on 58th between Lex and 3rd. Say hello to Sergio Maccioni's sons Marco Amaro and try one of their 30 wines by the glass at the hot new Manhattan Inn spot. Edgy's Bar at Le Cirque, 58th between 3rd and Lex.
This is Bill O'Shaughnessy, and it's Bofamonte season, as we call it here in Westchester. For years and years around here, Mario Bofamonte and his sons, Stephen, Anthony, and Benny, have been the royalty of the landscaping and outdoor maintenance world, and I don't exaggerate a bit. Their marvelous new headquarters near the New Rochelle Humane Society off 5th Avenue and off Potter is not the easiest place in the world to find, I can tell you, but it's the place individual homeowners go on their own for advice on everything that grows. And it's also the place professional landscapers take their clients to select plantings. The Mario Bofamonte and Sons Garden Center is a Westchester treasure, and it's the perfect time right now for a visit with your landscaper or on your own. Call 914-636-4428 and ask for Anthony, Stephen, Benny, or the great Mario Bofamonte himself for directions. I'm reminded the place is actually a few steps from the new Gundelax power equipment location, and it's only a few blocks from the radio station where I'm talking to you from right now. It's Mario Bofamonte time again in the land, I tell you.
I always wanted to be a fireman,
a pilot,
a teacher.
But the rising cost of college was a big reality check. That's why I joined the National Guard.
The Guard gives me money for college,
so I can go to school full-time and fly part-time.
My unit helps out after a natural disaster hits, so I get to help people just like I always wanted.
There's no bigger rush than being a firefighter in the Guard.
Than flying a Black Hawk.
Than leading my squad.
Thanks to the Guard, I'm becoming who I always wanted to be.
Call 1-800-GO-GUARD and ask us how much you'll receive towards your college expenses.
Sponsored by the New York National Guard, aired by the New York State Broadcasters Association and this station.
Vox Populi, WBOX, and born in the majestic language of the classic Latin scholars of the ancient Roman Forum, this is WBOX Radio, today's forum for the true voices of the people, local and vocal. There's always something happening every day and every night. 1460 AM and now worldwide at WVOX.com for you and yours.
Updated weather forecast, Westchester County in the vicinity of 4 this morning. We'll see mostly cloudy skies. A few showers this morning will pop up from time to time. Then partly sunny this afternoon with more thunderstorms becoming more numerous. Highs into the lower 80s. Mostly cloudy tonight. Partly cloudy overnight. Little lows into the middle 60s. Mostly sunny. Warmer highs in the lower 90s on Friday. I'm Steve Pelletieri, Jr. reporting for WVOX, WVIP, the Whitney Radio Network.
1460 WVOX.
We are back. This is Bob Levinsohn. You're listening to Environmentally Sound. I have in the studio with me Eric Byron, who is a naturalist, a shark expert, a scuba diver. I'm sure that he's many more things that I don't yet know about him. He's a cool guy. You're listening to WBOX AM 1460, originating in New Rochelle, New York. And we have on the phone a gentleman named Michael Skoletsky, who has a website named Shark Savers, called sharksavers.org, and he's going to join the conversation. Michael, are you there?
I am.
Okay, you're on with Eric Byron, who is a fellow shark guy.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Eric.
How are you?
And Bob Levinsohn, me. So we were just talking briefly about a new proposed legislation in Westchester County. I don't know if you know about that, to ban shark products.
Yeah, not only do we know about it, but we have a petition up on the Shark Savers website in support of the bill. And about 1,600 or so people from around the world have signed it so far.
I being one of them, Michael.
And in fact, I have that petition right in front of me here. Eric printed it out, so I see what it is. Excellent.
First, Michael, I wanted to congratulate you and everyone at sharksavers.org for all of your efforts in conservation. And I was actually at the DVD release party back in April here in New York, and I had the extreme pleasure of meeting Rob Stewart and Captain Paul Watson, of whom I'm sure you know both of
yep.
them.
Yeah.
It was a successful event. It opened the eyes of a lot of people who were there. And the reverberations from that, being a New York native, the word is starting to get out, and people are starting to finally realize that sharks are not the mythical monsters of the ocean, and that they are an important part of the marine ecosystem, and that they have an indirect impact on human beings.
That's right, and actually more of a direct impact. I'm glad you said all of those things. First of all, it always amazes me when people hear that I'm involved in an organization trying to save the sharks, that anybody would want to do that mm-hmm. if sharks deserve to die.
Right.
In fact, they are critically important to the oceans, to our own food sources, because all of the different species of the ocean are so interdependent on one another.
Right.
And sharks are being singled out more so than probably any other form of fish mm-hmm. because their fins are so valuable.
Right.
Are rapidly approaching extinction in all parts of the world, even though most people don't have any idea that that's going on.
Correct. And one of the things I found most interesting about the website itself, sharksavers.org, is the fact that it covers such a wide range of environmental issues in the marine ecology, as well as the petitions themselves, where you can oppose shark fishing in the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, banning of shark products here in Westchester, protecting the waters off South Africa, so that it's an interdependent, international problem that must be addressed and is being addressed, I feel. More efforts need to be concentrated probably by local and international governments to legislate against shark finning in their territorial waters, I believe. But I'm very encouraged as a shark enthusiast and as an avid diver and someone who absolutely adores and loves these animals to see the movement and the word getting out. And it's through efforts through people like yourself and your cohorts who I believe have done a magnificent job in doing so.
Michael, yeah. This is Bob. Let me just ask you a question. We discussed before I don't know if you were listening from the beginning.
I was not.
No, but we discussed before how if sharks disappear from an ecosystem, it goes down the line. And Eric gave an example of a place, I forget exactly where, but when the sharks were lost, the groupers somehow
the grouper population exploded.
They ate the other fish that actually kept the reef healthy, and the reef died. Where was that, Eric?
That was in Florida.
In Florida. So, what is your take? If sharks were to disappear, what would the impact be on this ocean ecosystem and on humans?
Well, if you consider the fact that sharks have been around for 450 million years, performing a very big task in the ocean, and that is that they help groom the overall balance of the ocean in many cases. They keep many different species in check, and over millions of years, species evolved to be dependent on that kind of control of each other. When you take that big force out of the system, things happen that you can't control, that are unpredictable. So there have been several studies that have shown in reef populations that everything goes awry when the sharks are taken out, because there are other fish that perhaps they feed on the coral and suddenly they're in greater abundance. In the case of the mid-Atlantic region, when the sharks were fished out there and were completely they completely disappeared, there are other species that became in greater abundance, and they happened to eat shellfish, and the entire scallop population was finished.
Right.
And it's a 100-year-old scallop fishery that disappears because the sharks go away.
Exactly. And to further your point, as far as the impact on human beings, the shark fin product prohibition law, which is being pushed here in Westchester County, specifically states that shark fins have shown to contain potentially dangerous levels of methylmercury. Sharks consistently rank amongst the very highest of all mercury-tainted seafood, unfortunately, because of the aggregate process of eating fish in the food chain. Unfortunately, because they're apex predators, they're more susceptible than a lot of others. And mercury has also been associated with lowering the male fertility rates, which sharks are not like bony fish where they can reproduce millions and or thousands of eggs. They reproduce very, very slowly. And the 30 to 100 million sharks that are being pulled out of the oceans every single year simply would take decades in order for the populations to come back and recover from that. And again, I'm very glad to see that Westchester County is leading the charge here in the United States to ban all shark fin products.
I just want to jump in there for a minute. It's important to note that Westchester County's bill is focused on public health.
Right.
Whereas we might be concerned about sharks from either humane standpoint or health of the ocean standpoint, this is not an environmental.
Oh,
bill.
I was wondering why Westchester County was such a leader.
Yeah, it's important to understand this. It is a critical point. It is a public health issue because
right.
sharks are consistently at the very top of the list of methylmercury concentration.
Right.
Mercury is one of the most toxic compounds to humans. And as Eric just said, and what happens in the food chain is that it accumulates as sharks are eating all these other fish. Their mercury is accumulating in the sharks, and sharks live for 30, 40, 70 years. They're old, and they're accumulating mercury that entire time. And then we might choose to eat it, and there's our month's worth or a year's worth of mercury. It's just not a smart idea. So there's really no reason to eat shark in the sense that it's not really a terribly popular food product except for shark fin soup, and even there it adds nothing in terms of the flavor.
Right.
It really could easily be taken off of anybody's menu, and we'd all be healthier for it. The oceans would be better for it, and nobody would miss it.
You say it's not flavorful. Do people eat shark fin soup because it shows some kind of machismo or something, that I killed a shark and I can eat him or something?
It is a cultural.
Is that more?
It's a cultural thing.
I never had the soup. I never had any desire to have the soup. But is that what it is? Is it more cultural than actually flavor?
It's supposed to enhance male fertility.
Oh, like the rhinoceros horn, which is keratin, which is your fingernails, right?
And it shows, exactly. It's a cultural thing where it's just, you know, if you can afford a bowl of hot shark fin soup, it shows that your status is at XYZ.
Now, this is mostly in Asia that sharks...
This is mostly in Asia,
now,
yeah.
What they seem to... I don't want to get... ethnocentric or racist in any way, but they seem to be much more destructive of what we would consider sensitive species and big ones like whales, sharks, rhinoceros horn. What is it, something cultural that I don't know, or am I just sticking my foot in my mouth?
Michael, well, you want to take that?
I think that I don't want to judge because I don't really know for sure, other than there have been studies that have shown that as people are educated in Asia as to what the ramifications of destroying certain animals are, their attitude changes. So a lot of times it's out of ignorance. Even here in the United States, we do a lot of things that aren't so good for us in the environment, and
true
and,
that.
You know, it's very easy for us to justify that.
Sure.
So I think the important thing is for us to be respectful of other people's cultures, but because this particular enjoyment of shark fin soup is so destructive for the worldwide environment in the oceans, it's critically important that we do conduct an awareness and education program. We're trying to start one ourselves in China because that's really where the problem is.
Right.
Michael, can you hold on just a minute? I want to just take a quick break. You are listening to Environmentally Sound on WVOX, which is AM 1460 here in New Rochelle. If you are listening in St. Louis, Missouri, East St. Louis, Illinois, Kansas City, Missouri, or Kansas, Virginia, or West Virginia, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live. And now I would just like to tell you about my friends at The Learning Shop in Harrison, New York. The Learning Shop is a full-service tutoring company year-round, but when it comes to the summertime, they have a music program that will take your child, your grandchild, or yourself on a journey with talented working musicians, including singers, engineers, and songwriters. As I keep saying, I'm not just reading ad copy here. I know these people at the Learning Shop. I have played music with them. I have recorded with them. I have learned from them. And this is just me, as you know, I'm not a client or a student. If you are a student up there, you get really the benefit of some excellent professional musicians, writers, and engineers on state-of-the-art software. The Learning Shop is located in Harrison, and by the way, let's not forget their real job, which is to tutor in all subjects. They're hooked up with a good number of school districts. They do a lot of homebound instruction. They're located in Harrison, New York. Telephone number is 914-835-1070. That's 835-1070. These guys are the best, and I'm not saying that just because they're my sponsor. I would not have a sponsor I didn't believe in, and I do believe in the Learning Shop of Harrison, New York, 914-835-1070. Okay, we are back with Eric Byron and Michael Skoletsky, and we were, I'm sorry, we left it.
We were touching on the Asian markets.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Michael, you said how you like to respect other people's cultures. And yes, I know that's the right thing to say, and I like to say it, and I try to respect other people's cultures. But when I see people buying ivory because it's a cultural thing, and buying a rhinoceros horn, even though rhinoceros are going extinct, I have little patience for those cultures. And there are many other examples of people who are destroyed. Like, okay, now I'm going to rant just a tiny bit. This is a little off topic, but it's on the topic of cultures. In schools around the world, and the kids are expected not to look like gangs. They can't wear that. And I think that whether you're a Jewish kid, if you're in a public school and there's a rule, no headgear, you can't wear that yarmulke. If you're that religious, you should go to a Jewish school. I'm Jewish, so I suppose I can get away with that one. But the same thing with Muslims, and certainly the same thing with covering your face up. These are all cultural things. I don't think a culture or a religion should prevail in the face of the better good for us all. And I'm finished with that.
I'm not condoning a cultural thing if it's harmful. I'm just I'm in the business of having to persuade people to stop doing something or
Oh, I can never do your job. You're much more diplomatic than I am.
But on the other hand, whereas with ivory, for example, there are international laws against the trade of those things, and there's very little international law that's protecting the sharks.
Right.
Virtually none. So you have three species out of approximately 400 that have any real protection internationally. And even then, that doesn't stop a rather robust black market of shark fins, where these people really don't care what species they're going after. And of those three species that are protected by it's an organization called CITES, which is the same organization that's probably protecting the ivory, or at least establishing these rules. It's an organization of about 110 or so countries. The three species that are protected by CITES are only three out of over 100 species of shark that are in real danger of extinction. So these things move slowly in terms of international law. Some countries are very good at protecting sharks. We actually, the United States is one of the better countries.
True. Yes.
But we have shark finning in waters that we control.
And there are shark. I've seen shark contests. So who can catch the biggest shark up in New England?
And unfortunately,
to me, that's outrageous.
Right here in Montauk, the 22nd annual Star Island Yacht Club Shark Tournament was a week ago, and it was held under protest by a couple of different organizations. That sparked a lot of debate about whether or not these anglers should be using this, using sharks for sport in any way, shape, or form. And I happen to agree with them. To touch on both the cultural effects, the human impact of it. You know, shark water is a remarkable. For those of you who have not seen it, is a remarkable documentary put together by a gentleman by the name of Rob Stewart. And you can go on sharksavers.org or sharkwater.org or sharkwater.com and get more information about it. And Rob Stewart basically galvanized how the Taiwanese go into Costa Rican waters, do illegal longline fishing, do shark finning, and it's all to feed the huge, huge Asian market. To touch on what Michael said before about education, you know, that's what's going to stop the shark finning. It's educating fishermen, it's educating the general public, it's educating governments around the world as to the dangers and the impact that this is going to have on the marine environment, fishing, and fisheries all over the world. It's interesting to me that we're at a place right now where, you know, global warming is a scientific reality. More and more people around the world are understanding the impact of global warming and the effects that the trickle down effects it has on us as human beings, and it's all interconnected. Anything that has to do with the environment, human beings are part of. And the thing that I find most encouraging is that the younger people, the next generation, the teenagers, it's now becoming hip to be green. It's now cool to be eco-friendly. It is now good to be able to look to the future and say to yourself, you know, we want to have sharks around in 20, 30 years. We want to be able to have reef systems that our grandchildren can go and visit. And these are the things that help me and a lot of other researchers and scientists such as Michael and a lot of other people, they spur us on because we know that there is hope. It is not lost yet.
Michael, your website is sharksavers.org. Is that it?
That's right.
Okay, and anything you'd like to tell us about the website?
This is predominantly a Westchester audience. It's very important that all of you support this legislation, which is just going to be coming up for a vote probably sometime, I hope, in July.
In July, yeah.
And you could do that by either going to our website to sign the petition, write to the legislators that we've listed there, and you know, learn more about this issue. There are obviously a lot of issues in the world to worry about at this time, so, you know, why sharks? But it's surprising how sharks are a critical part of this mix, and I think it's something that we can actually do something about. There are a lot of other issues that are seem even more insurmountable. I think that this is something that we can do something about, and I think it'll benefit us, it'll benefit the oceans, and it's the right thing to do. So sharksavers.org.
Okay, and these legislators in Westchester County are William E. Burton, he's the chairman of the Legislation Committee, and Thomas Abenanti, who is the chairman of the Environment and Energy Committee. I'm just sorry to hear, I didn't know this, but I'm sorry to hear that their motivation is human health, once again, the mercury in the fish. I guess that's good for the shark that it has the mercury. It might wind up saving them, but... maybe the evolution will even favor them to acquire more mercury to become more toxic to humans, so they won't be hunted so. However, I think it would be nice if they just said, you know what, let's let the sharks live. We don't need them. I mean, we need them alive. We don't need them in our on our tables.
Right. Most people are terrified of sharks. If they go to the beach, they're afraid of getting attacked. They think these animals are just mindless brutes that will come into the surf and chew them up. But when I looked at the Global Shark Attack file, which lists all the shark attacks or known or reported shark attacks around the world, so far in 2008, there have been 36 attacks worldwide, 22 of them, surprisingly enough, coming here, happening here in the United States, five of which were fatal, 17 were in Florida, three were in California, one was in North Carolina, and one was in South Carolina.
What about Hawaii?
No reports of fatality so far.
Wow.
And only one U.S. fatality and five around the world. When you consider that people die more from hippopotamus attacks, okay?
Most dangerous animal in Africa.
One of the most dangerous, if not the most dangerous animal in Africa. Yep. People don't realize
that.
Yeah,
that's right.
Bee stings, pit bulls. I mean, all of these animals, you know, have a higher fatality rate against human beings than sharks do. But we kill millions and millions and millions of sharks every single year. So when you ask yourself who's the bigger monster here, it's really us. It's really human beings.
It's quite true. So you know, those statistics are they don't lie. I mean, dogs are still our best friend, and pit bulls. We talk about pit bulls all the time, but overall, all dogs cause more deaths than sharks.
Well,
and
but of course,
we live in their.
That's
you know,
right.
Together,
that's the point.
The proximity is greater, so it's not that sharks are more dangerous.
You have to go somewhere to get
dangerous.
Killed by a shark.
Yeah, well, but the point is that the fear is misplaced.
Right.
Sharks, for the most part, the reason why with the number of shark bites that there are around the world that mm-hmm. that there's a relatively few number of deaths from those bites.
Right.
Is that certainly a shark would have eaten that person if it wanted to.
Sure.
It doesn't because we're not really their food. It's a mistake.
Right.
And very few sharks around the world, given that how many there are, that actually, by the way, they really are in the beaches that we, you know, swimming around the beaches that we're swimming in. There are a lot more sharks than we're aware of there.
Really?
Well, especially bull sharks, absolutely, yeah.
That's right.
But they're harmless,
there,
right?
But they don't
bull sharks,
bite us
no,
because
they're
not interested. They're really not interested in us. So the fear is media-driven. Every time somebody gets bitten by a shark, there's hundreds of articles all around the world reinforcing this image that our good friend Peter Benchley, who actually is a friend now of the sharks, but
yes,
didn't start out that way by writing Jaws. It was a work of fiction, and who would know that that particular work of fiction would stick? And most people with other issues, you know, if you think of War of the Worlds, I mean, it's not like 40, 60 years later we're running around thinking that the Martians are invading. This
right.
is just fiction.
Right.
Sharks are not our enemy,
okay.
and in fact they're good to have around. And you know, a lot of us dive with sharks, and they're
Michael.
You know, they get a little rambunctious.
Thanks
every
a lot,
now
Michael.
And then.
Michael, we got a bail on you. Sorry, but thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you, Michael.
I'd like to thank Michael Skoletsky of SharkSavers.org for phoning in. And, of course, I'd like to thank Eric Byron for coming into our studio today. Sharks are fearsome creatures, not that is pop culture. Most sharks are docile creatures, yet we are determined to destroy them for some reason. Our thought for the week, just because someone agrees with you doesn't make you right. It just means there's someone else out there who's as uninformed as you are. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. You are here. It is now.
This is the flagship station of Whitney Media, live from New York's Golden Apple, 1460 WVOX New Rochelle, and worldwide at WVOX.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Dave Anthony. The right to bear arms means me and you can own a gun. A historic Supreme Court ruling just handed down. Fox News Radio's Chris Barnes is live in Washington.
Yeah, Dave, it's the first such ruling on gun rights in U.S. history. Justices saying in a 5-4 decision that individual Americans